This is Digital Story Podcast number 1015, September 2nd, 2025. Today's theme is Creativity Through Pain. I'm Derek Story. At one time or another, we all have to endure a physical setback, sometimes for a week, maybe a month, hopefully not longer. Pain is a motivation killer. So how do we make best use of our downtime when things aren't going our way? We'll explore those options in the first segment of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I don't know about you, but I don't feel like doing much when I'm hurting. I just want the pain to go away, just magically go away. And then I'll get to all the other things that are piling up around me. But the reality is, if we can find a way to navigate the discomfort, we have time to work on our projects that isn't normally available to us. It's not like you're expected to go out and mow the lawn with a broken arm, right? But lighting that creative spark is easier said than done. Another nap is the path of least resistance. So I'm hoping these tips, based on my own experiences and research, will help you the next time you find yourself wincing on the sidelines. And guess what? I have 5 tips for you here. 5. Isn't that a coincidence? 5? Never done that before, right? Okay, let's start with the obvious. Get treatment. I mean, I know you're going, of course. But I'm amazed at how the healthcare system is not optimally designed for our fast recovery. Many primary care doctors are under pressure to keep costs down and limit tests and treatments that could help us get back into action faster. This is where we need to do our own research, advocate for advanced care, and apply persistence. Don't settle for Advil and rest. Once you get the proper treatment plan, it's amazing at how much better you'll feel and how much faster you'll recover. And in this area, I really feel like these days in particular, the onus is on us to help our caregivers understand that we're serious about recovery, that we want to have a plan, and we want to get the help that we need. Now, sometimes you'll need help. Maybe your spouse or a family member be an advocate with you. But what really counts is getting in your head the goals that you have for recovery, maybe doing a little legwork with some suggestions, and show healthcare providers that you're really motivated to move this thing along, and then get them motivated to help you. Number 2, hold up your end of the bargain. Almost every effective treatment plan involves your participation. Sometimes you're asked to walk when you don't feel like it, endure physical therapy when it's the last thing that you want to do, or curtail activities that will slow your healing. Once you're lucky enough to get a treatment plan, follow it. It makes a huge difference. And every time that I've had to recover from something, and I've had a number of things over the years, both as an athlete and just kind of an outdoor person, and then just sometimes kind of a clumsy person, right? Every time I've had something that I had to recover from, I had a major part in that recovery. In other words, you know, you're just not going to medicate the problem away. You know, you have to usually do some sort of physical therapy, some sort of exercise. I know, I'll tell you, modern day medicine has a much different point of view about what you should be doing and how fast you should be doing it after a procedure. Back a couple years ago, when I had hip replacement surgery, I had surgery in the morning. In recovery, I had a nurse and a physical therapist walk me through, you know, using a cane, a walker, going up steps. I had just had the hip replaced that morning. I go home. The bedroom's upstairs, 14 stairs. I can tell you exactly how many they are. 7 stairs with a turnaround and then another 7 stairs. I know each of those stairs intimately. I went up those stairs the afternoon of my surgery, got to the bedroom, and then, of course, you know, was laid up there for a while, started my physical recovery, my therapy, you know, all that good stuff. Same day. Now, I dare say a number of years ago, that would not be the case. You'd probably be in the hospital for 3 days before you even went home. Now they have you going upstairs the same day that you have surgery. So the philosophy about healing and recovery has really evolved a lot in recent years. And sometimes it feels counterintuitive to embrace that philosophy, but the fact of the matter is, it really does make you get better faster. So you have to hold up your end of the bargain. Sometimes you have to be a little brave, but it pays off. All right, once you got that out of the way, then we can get to being creative, right? So make a projects list that's within your grasp. If you can't mow the lawn, then you certainly shouldn't be out on the trail with your camera, okay? There's a certain amount of common sense here. But you probably can edit images on your laptop, organize archives, and improve workflows that you've been procrastinating about. There's a whole list of things hanging out at the bottom of your to-do. Now's maybe the time to address them. And boy, doesn't it feel good to check one or two of those things off that have been there forever? This could be your golden opportunity. So in a sense, you're reframing what creativity is. You're going from creating some magic with your camera to creative problem solving, right? You're using your creativity to solve problems, to accomplish goals, to improve workflows. It's more of a pragmatic application, but the fact of the matter is we need both. We need to be both creative in the moment when we're making stuff, and then we need to figure out how to execute, you know, all those things that we need to do in a creative way so that we can both create content and then manage it. Make a projects list, make it within your grasp, make it something that you can do. Again, you know, you have certain limitations during your recovery depending on what your situation is, so tailor something to your situation. It feels so good to make headway on these things when you would otherwise just be, you know, lying there watching TV, which is nice for a little bit, but come on, you don't want to spend 3 weeks doing that. All right, number four, pace yourself. Intermix a little bit of work with a lot of rest and rehab. There's no pressure to move quickly, especially if you're laid up for a couple weeks. Develop a rhythm that becomes your temporary normal. An hour of productivity in the morning, another hour in the afternoon. It really breaks up the day and it makes the downtime far more tolerable. And rhythm is the key word here. And again, this is something that I've noticed from personal experience. You know, at first, when your world gets turned upside down with some sort of medical situation, you're disoriented. We all are, you know, because we're taken out of our daily routine, our daily life, the things that we want to do. We maybe have to cancel things that we had on the books. It's frustrating. It's just frustrating. So you're really kind of out of sorts in that first phase there. With a little bit of planning and a little bit of organization, you know, getting your treatment plan down, addressing your projects list, you know, just sort of evaluating what you can do and what you can't do, and then you can start to develop a new rhythm. And that rhythm's going to be a lot slower than what you normally do, but that's okay. You probably have a little bit of time on your hands, so you don't have to move as fast. Plus, you have some air cover because of the injury. Again, you know, you're not going to be expected to do a lot of things that are normally distracting and pulling you away from these projects. Look at it as an opportunity or things that will move the ball forward when you are out of the shop. Number five, set goals and share them with your caregivers. I have found this is so important. In a lot of ways, it sort of ties to number one, where you're advocating for your treatment plan, you know, so that you can get better faster. And I have found that caregivers tend to respond physicians and therapists and so forth tend to respond positively when you have some sort of goal in mind, especially a realistic goal, a goal that you've thought about, a goal that you go, you know, I want to be able to go on this trip in 6 weeks. What do I have to do to be able to go on the trip? There's something that happens. A switch gets flipped where suddenly they're engaged in this problem with you, this challenge on how to solve it. And I have seen lackluster original treatment plans get turbocharged into something really interesting when I started sharing the goals that I had for recovery with the doctors, the therapists, and your spouse, family members, all those folks. You sort of get these people rallying behind you. It's like people in the stands cheering for you when you're out on the tennis court. So get folks on your team, get folks motivated and get them to buy into, you know, your goals. But first you have to set those goals. First you have to set those goals and show that you're serious about doing your part to reach it. It's amazing how much energy you can initiate and create by doing this. So set goals and share them with your caregivers. So as I said earlier, of course it's initially demoralizing to accept that you're in the shop for a while, but don't let discouragement set in. Diplomatically push for the care that you need, do your part, and find productive uses for the downtime. And remember, don't forget to thank everyone who helps you along the way. There are some interesting stories in the news this week. I'm going to start out with this one. This is on F-Stoppers. 5 times shooting JPEG photos is the smarter play. And I have a link to this article in the show notes. RAW is practically a religion. It preserves sensor data, maximizes editing latitude, and lets you recover mistakes that would wreck a JPEG. That's all true and still incomplete. Shoot raw or you're not serious turns a tool into a dogma. Tools aren't moral, they're contextual. The job dictates the format, not the other way around. Modern cameras change the ground rules. JPEG engines aren't the crunchy dinosaurs we remember from the 2000s. Picture profiles are nuanced, highlight protection is smarter, and in-camera noise reduction isn't a smear fest anymore. There's some pretty good writing here, wouldn't you say? On the workflow side, clients want speed, consistency, and files that slot straight into their channels. The best format is the one that gets them there at professional quality with minimal friction. None of this downgrades RAW. It just widens your playbook. Here are 5 scenarios when shooting JPEG is the smarter move. Not because you can't shoot RAW, but because you're choosing the right tool for the constraints, deliverables, and deadlines in front of you. All right, let's take a look at these 5 things. I'm a fan of JPEGs too, and a lot of it for me has come out of film simulations and things like that. I just love them. But there are other reasons too, and some of those reasons are covered right here. First one, when you need immediate turnaround. There are shoots when the clock is the client. Sports, news, corporate launches, political events. If you're not publishing while attention is peaking, you're late. I can't perfect the RAWs tonight is not a professional answer when the editor needs frames now and the social team is already drafting copy. Now, there's more to this. There'll be more to all these, but you have the link to the article so you can check it out. Number 2, when you're volume shooting. Volume is a different beast. School portraits, youth sports, corporate headshots, catalog runs can run hundreds of thousands of nearly identical frames when consistency and thorough put matter more than extreme edit latitude. The constraint isn't dynamic range, it's the number of minutes in the workday. RAW eats those minutes. Every extra gigabyte means slower imports, heavier previews, longer exports, and more backup overhead. If your lighting is controlled and your ratios are stable, RAW's headroom becomes insurance that you don't need and a cost you'll definitely feel. That's nice. And again, there's a lot more on all these. I mean, he really digs down into all of these ideas. When storage bandwidth is limited, this is number three. Remote work exposes the tyranny of file size. Long assignments, travel features, expeditions, disaster coverage, or anywhere you can't wheel a RAID case forces you to pick between data weight and shooting freedom. RAW tips that balance the wrong way. Run the math. 45 megapixel RAWs, about 50 megabytes each, a modest 400 frames a day, and you're burning 20 gigabytes daily. Add redundancy because you're not reckless, and 2 weeks later, you've hauled, mirrored, and verified close to a terabyte before you even try to upload the selects over a weak hotel Wi-Fi or a cellular hotspot. That's when storage or bandwidth is limited. Number four, when you've perfectly dialed in camera settings. RAW is a parachute. Parachutes are great until you realize you're carrying one on a flight that never leaves the ground. In controlled environments, parachutes add weight and slow you down. If you know your light, own your own ratios, and trust your workflow, JPEG can be the final image, not the rough draft. Studio portraits, product runs, and catalog flats are repeatable systems. You meter, you set your white balance, you confirm tethered, you shoot to match the brand look you've already signed off with the client. In that context, RAW Latitude isn't adding creative value, it's duplicating what your camera already did well. And number five, when the client doesn't need more, and this is one that I have found through experience over and over again. Deliverables should match use. A local business website, a newsletter header, a social campaign, or an internal deck. None of these benefits from 50 megabyte RAWs or 16-bit TIFFs. They benefit from clean, sharp images that load quickly, look consistent across devices, and arrive without tech support calls. Over-delivering format is a subtle client experience failure. Huge files bog down email and create unnecessary back and forth. The perception is difficult, not high quality. When the output is digital first, JPEG is the native currency. All right, and here's Alex Cook's conclusion. RAW is powerful. It's also heavy on time, on storage, on process. JPEG is efficient. It's also unfairly maligned. The mark of a pro isn't blind loyalty to a format, it's the judgment to pick the right one. When the clock is ruthless, JPEG wins. When the scale is the constraint, JPEG wins. When storage and bandwidth are scarce, JPEG wins. When your setup is nailed, JPEG wins. When the deliverable is digital first, JPEG often wins. RAW still owns plenty of territory. Complex grades, tricky light, print campaigns, and archival masters. But the smarter business is knowing which hill you're on before you start climbing. Use the tool that serves the brief, the timeline, and the client. That's not heresy, that's professionalism. Is Rolly testing something new and analog? This is on DP Review. Going to read you a little bit about it. You can read the rest via the link in the show notes. Rolly Analog may have something new coming for analog shooters, according to its first Instagram post in 4 years. The company shared "We are back" on its account this week with hints of something is coming. The Instagram account, Rolly Analog, hadn't posted since October 14th, 2021. This week, though, it shared a post with a zebra and text saying, "We are back," and "Be prepared and stay tuned." The caption of the post said, "It has big plans, new projects, and analog inspiration." It isn't clear if that's simply an announcement that the Instagram account will be active again, or if there are new products coming. Over the past year, we've seen the Rolly name pop up on other products, including a mirrorless lens and a Rolly 35AF film camera. However, those products are the result of licensing deals with other companies obtaining the rights to use Rolly branding on their products. The lens looked as though it was a likely rebranded 7 Artisans offering, The revival of the iconic Rolly 35 in an autofocus format was a project by Mint Camera, which licensed the Rolly name. Rolly's analog cryptic posts leaves a lot to the imagination, and the comments are peppered with requests. We'll just have to wait and see what it means by big plans. That would be interesting if Rolly worked on something that was tantalizingly analog. We'll see. I mean, Pentax teased and teased and teased, and then they delivered. Time will tell. I'm sick of AI photos, so I've switched to this search engine that filters them out. This is on Digital Camera World. I have a link in the show notes. Because if I see one more photo of a moonlight wolf that looks like it's been airbrushed by a bored algorithm, I'll scream. I'm over AI images. Done. The internet is drowning in them, and they're not just annoying. They're a slap in the face to real photographers. Yes, the tech is clever. If my social media feed is anything to go by, the hours of skill, timing, and craft that go into real photography is currently being buried under a deluge of algorithmic slop that looks like a 90s stock photo library had an oversaturated fever dream. All right, and then he goes on and on about this part. I think we've got the picture there, so to speak. So, what's the solution? For decades, it never occurred to most of us that there's an alternative to searching in Google. There are, however, plenty, and one of the most popular is DuckDuckGo. Recently, DuckDuckGo announced that it enables you to filter out AI images. Hidden in the AI images dropdown is the magical option, Hide All AI Images. Click it, and suddenly you're looking at real, flawed, beautiful photos again. It's not perfect. Some AI junk slips through, but it's a huge improvement. Unlike Google, which seems determined to shove AI down our throats, DuckDuckGo treats it as optional. You get to decide how much you want to see. A nice little tip there for folks that maybe are feeling the same way. A little AI goes a long ways. Don't all the pictures at some point really look the same? I mean, really. Yeah. Okay. DuckDuckGo. Make a note. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with photography workshops today. And in particular, I want to talk about the upcoming Route 66 photography workshop, October 14th through 17th, 2025. Rob Knight is leading this workshop, and I know he has a seat open, and I asked him, Rob, what should people know about that open seat? And here's what he had to say. Join photographer and Route 66 explorer Rob Knight to explore the Mother Road this October 14th through 17th. The stretch of Route 66 through northern Arizona contains many of the most iconic spots that still exist from the heyday of American car culture. We will visit towns along Route 66 like Oatman and Williams, Arizona. Along the way, we will explore and photograph the roadside attractions that made Route 66 so legendary, like motels, gas stations, and more. The workshop will combine field work and exploration with lab sessions to make sure you come home with some iconic shots. Rob has been exploring and photographing Route 66 for 13 years, and he will make sure that you are in the right place at the right time for the best light and photographic opportunities. Meet the group in Las Vegas and head south, where your days will be filled with exploration, learning, and great photography. And I've been talking with Rob about this workshop, and he has a great plan for anyone that wants to go. We've already got signups, of course, but we do have an open seat. And basically, you bring your camera and your luggage and your creativity and your desire to explore, and Rob is going to take care of the rest for you. It's going to be a great time. It's coming up in this October. All you have to do is go to our photography workshop page. You can get there through the digital story, the Nimble Photographer. You can register right there. There's more information about the workshop. And if you've been thinking about doing a little something like this in October, I think this would be an excellent choice. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members, the folks that sponsor this podcast month in and month out. They have their own site on Derek's Story Online, our Inner Circle space where we share pictures, thoughts, questions, all the good stuff. It's a virtual water cooler of photographers all hanging about, swapping pictures and knowledge and I don't know, whatever else people want to talk about. It's a pretty free form, I have to tell you. You also get discounts on things like the Route 66 workshop. Yeah, that's right. Just by being an Inner Circle member, we have Inner Circle Bold, which entitles bold members. They get a free online workshop next year. There'll be more about that when the 2026 workshop season is announced. And that's in addition to their discounts and all the other perks that come along with it. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member or Inner Circle Bold member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of Digital Story, nose around a bit, sign up, and next thing you know, you'll be hearing from me and I'll get you going ASAP. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. And finally, I'd like to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. Imagine something like, oh, this is something crazy, like going on the Route 66 workshop, shooting some killer black and white during the workshop, and then coming home, firing up your inkjet printer, getting some excellent paper exactly designed for the kind of mood that you want to present in that shot, and making some prints. Now, you could tell people that you were on a workshop and that you had a good time. You could show them some little pictures on your iPhone, and they go, oh, yeah, that's nice. And you know, everyone looks at pictures on iPhones. If you want to separate yourself from the digital mayhem and show some true artwork, then make a nice 13 by 19 or 11 by 14 or even 8.5 by 11 stunning print on Red River paper. Now that is a way to show what kind of time you had at a workshop or on a vacation or any travel adventure. And to get started, all you have to do is click on the Red River paper tile that's on every page of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, read some articles, get some tips, buy some paper, and start making art. That way, you can show off what you've been doing in a very fine art kind of way. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. Well, that's going to do it for me this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you can, get out there and take some pictures. If you can't, find something creative to do at home. Either way, come back and join me next week. Until then, be safe, be creative. Bye-bye now.